On this, the second Halloween episode of The Flophouse, we discuss The Happening, a film that somehow doesn't even manage to live up to its name.
Wait, are we going to do the intro first? Like, yes. Okay, so should we let you stop cracking up from all my jokes?
Oh, boy.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
Hey, we watched a movie tonight.
That we did.
A movie that I've been waiting for ever since.
Your whole life.
I saw the reviews this summer. Sure. Movie I've been looking forward to.
For me, it was when I saw the movie posters.
Yeah.
And for me, it was when I heard the title.
Once a year, maybe twice a year, but no more than three times a year comes along a movie. You know, I'm like, we should got to go see this in the theaters. We need to do a Flophouse in the theaters episode, and then we don't get our
that
act
didn't
together.
Happen,
we
yeah.
don't do it.
No.
But now it's out on DVD.
Laziness.
Flophouse in the aisles. Didn't happen.
Yeah. That movie is called The Happening. M. Night Shyamalan's
M. Night Shyamalan brings you his vaguest title yet.
So I assume that this movie was about 1960s performance art, right? Correct?
Yeah, I also actually had that assumption.
Yeah.
Was it?
I think it was about something less interesting.
topic. It's hard to imagine. It's like M. Night Shyamalan set out to challenge his audience to pay attention to his movie or be interested in any way.
Well, and he challenged it, too. Like, if you recall, the ad campaigns were all like, M. Night Shyamalan's first R-rated film. And, like we were all, like, chomping at the bit. Like,
The Fuckening.
Oh, God. What is this master of modern suspense going to do with...
Here's where I'm going to take... Well, we'll talk about that later. With the drastic overrating of M. Night Shyamalan's work.
Yeah,
but anyway...
imagine the palette he has access to now. Painting in such swaths of gore and nudity.
Listen, his rose period is over. Time for the blue period.
Oh, my God. But I would say that this movie was a solid PG-13, maybe a PG even.
Maybe even a G.
Well, Elliot, I still don't think you understand how they rate movies. You suggested Prom Night was a G
It was either a G or a triple X.
Triple X is not a actual rating.
Quadruple X.
MPAA, no.
I think both of those
You're just adding X's.
I think both of those guys are wrestlers, actually.
Oh.
Nice.
Oh, okay. Well, one of them I know is an extreme spy. So
nice. Is one of the Ice Cube.
Iced Cube.
Could I have one of those iced cubes in my beverage, please?
When you're actually trying to ask for a compact disc, possibly a lethal injection or the Predator.
Anyway, we watched the movie The Happening, starring Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
And Zooey Deschanel.
And John Leguizamo.
Yeah, starring in its complete sense.
Yeah.
Like a real star.
It's rare. There's almost no scenes that Mark Wahlberg is not in.
Or whispering
in a strangely feminine way
that are shoved into his hands by the other actors who don't want to be in them.
Yeah, well, that's
a lot of
eyebrow acting. That's one thing about this movie is I love Zooey Deschanel. I think she can make most boring roles interesting, and she's adorable.
Sure.
And this film, God damn, she's given nothing to work with. Like, I think her character note is whiny. Like
whiny and vaguely emotionally unstable.
Yeah, we're introduced to her early in the film when people are dying and we think that this is a terrorist attack. She's like, God, just when you think people can't get more evil. And like that sort of
aren't
strikes...
people crappy, I think she says at one point,
yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. You know, I made a comment before the movie, guys, about Zooey Deschanel, and you know what? I kind of want to take it back. Like I don't want to do that.
And
anymore.
And you might want to say what that comment was because it was
please.
Very specific.
No, it's carnal knowledge, kind of.
So you wished that she had starred in Carnal Knowledge,
yes,
with Jack Nicholson.
And I take it back.
Yeah.
And Art Garfunkel.
Art Garfunkel and Margaret too, right?
Yeah, she wasn't very good, and her
Stewart said that he would like to finger bang Zooey Deschanel,
but didn't want it to go further than that. She was too innocent.
Apparently, he's a gentleman.
Well, no,
as far as he wanted to take
it. I just don't know if I feel like having that kind of a commitment with her. Like,
so it's more like you sidle up next to her at the bus, on the bus stop, you know, sure. Do your business, and yep. Then, oh, my bus is here, gotta go.
Yep.
I'm waiting for the M35. That's okay, see you later.
This is like a really weird sort of combination of sexual aggression
right on the money.
And like gentlemanliness. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Like, I'll wear a rubber glove if she wants. That's cool. I'll clip my fingernails.
Yeah,
because
really
that'll
short. Feel even. That'll feel great.
I'll
that won't remind her of going to the doctor.
I'll use a lot of horse vaginal lubricant.
All right, this is
wow. Let's talk about the movie, huh? Yikes. The Happening. I didn't expect the finger banging stuff to come up until the second half of the episode.
Sure.
When we're searching for things to talk about.
I've run out of ideas already.
So the movie begins with thrilling scenes of people stopping in place and then walking backwards.
And then killing themselves.
Yeah.
And in very silly way, like
non-bloody ways.
Very non-bloody, but also just the way it's paced, the way it's the movie feels like a parody of like a disaster horror
sure.
movie. Like it like if M. Night Shyamalan had released it as like M. Night Shyamalan's first wacky comedy, The Happening. Thump these, and then like, you know, people falling off of a building in rapid fire, or like a car suddenly crashing into a tree for no reason.
Yeah.
Like
people start killing themselves in
very
idea,
overwrought ways.
Well, I mean, the idea is like they kill themselves in the first way that is at hand, but in practice, that just means that they kill themselves in goofy ways. Like the very first killing is like a woman's like, "Well, I got to kill myself now. What do I have on? I have this chopstick that's been keeping my bun up, my hair in place.
My hair
I'll
bun.
I'll ram that through my neck."
And then there's a guy at a construction site, and construction workers are just dropping off the top of the building, but not in like a scary, like, oh my God way. More in like a, here comes some more. Thump, 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 thump. And everyone's reactions are
partly cloudy with a chance of construction workers.
Everyone's immediate reaction is not like, what? It's more like, dear God.
What is happening?
Santa Maria! Like, I don't want to get too dark or mention things that, you know, shouldn't be mentioned on the Flophouse. But the thing that kept striking me was that, like, he's trying to get across the kind of feeling that people had on September 11th, where it was like, you know, something is happening and you don't know what it is and you're scared and you know that something terrible has happened, but you don't know what's going on. And the first thing, I think everybody's first.
Kind of like Cloverfield.
Yeah, like Cloverfield. We were talking about War of the Worlds, how much more successful Spielberg's War of the Worlds was at this. But like everyone's reaction that day was like, what?
Or Blair Witch Project.
Oh, now I'm scared, like kind of. But like no one has that moment.
Or RoboCop 2.
Or losing it. But nobody has that immediate reaction of like, what? Before the terror sinks in. Like everyone's super frightened right off the bat in a way that is totally unrealistic and very unconvincing.
Yeah. Well, and then smash cut to Mark Wahlberg.
As a science teacher in high school.
He's a high school science teacher, which, you know, that's the logical protagonist in this scenario. I mean, I understand, you know, like he wants him to be like an everyman, but I really don't feel like there's like a really strong reason why M. Night Shyamalan has made him a
Well, he talks about science a lot. Well, he's
like the worst science teacher.
He's a science teacher who's introduced telling his class, bees are disappearing in great numbers, because we all remember that was in the news
sure.
for a while. Why is this happening? And the correct answer that the kid gives him is, it's an act of nature and we'll never know. And he goes, yes, you're right.
Correct. 100%. Go home early.
Yeah. Mark Wahlberg says,
here's a sticker that says champion.
He says, he's like, yeah, science will come up with an explanation, but it's just going to be a theory. And I'm like, why did this guy go into science? What does he need to teach science? Like,
he's working off of Sarah Palin's curriculum. No! Topical.
He's like a missionary who like just stumbled backwards
a very religious organization decided to put Manchurian candidates into science teacher positions, where it's like, just teach the kids that science can't be trusted and doesn't exist, and that way we'll get our message across. You know, like,
well, also they use this B thing, but then they're just like
drop it immediately.
Well, they drop it immediately, but also like Mark Wahlberg is like, yeah, bees are disappearing, and the corpses, we can't even find the corpses. I'm like, that's not true. The bees died off, but I'm pretty sure that the bees were still there. They didn't just vaporize when they died.
Aliens took them away.
Mm-hmm.
The thing Illuminati. Is, like, if it wasn't for this happening, I think that Mark Wahlberg's character would be stiff competition for Drew Barrymore's character in Donnie Darko for teacher of most believable teacher,
for terrible teacher, yeah,
in movies ever.
The Destructors is a story about...
It's the most beautiful phrase in the English language.
Oh, God.
I think we can all agree on that.
But the...
Dark Art jokes.
And also John Leguizamo is his friend and fellow teacher who, out of nowhere, decides to tell... they get a message from Alan Rickman in a small role as the school principal, and he should have been the hero of the movie.
Alan Rudd.
Oh, Alan Rudd, I'm sorry. I always get their names
I think it would
up.
Be great if Alan Rickman was
there. That'd have been
there's
awesome.
A problem. Everyone should leave the school.
It seems there's some sort of happening.
Sorry, it's Alan Rudd. I'm
Alan
sorry.
Rudd, Cameron from Ferris Bueller's sure. Day Off.
Yeah, but he tells them briefly, something's happening in New York. It looks like a terrorist attack, so everybody leave the school and go home. And John Leguizamo, in the midst of this, everybody's worried, leaving the school, decides to tell Mark Wahlberg, you know, on your wedding day, I saw your bride, and she was crying, and it looked like she didn't want to marry you. Well, see you later. Gotta go.
You shouldn't bring her along when we evacuate.
You shouldn't bring her along when we leave. So
the whole beginning of the film is there's merit. Everything is awkward. Fraught. There's marital tension between Zooey Deschanel and Mark Wahlberg,
mm-hmm.
and every sentence feels weighted down with, like, heavy meaning. And then later on, I don't want to get too ahead, but later on we discover that
Zooey
Deschanel...
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the town of Princeton yet.
Oh, well, we'll get there, but Zooey Deschanel is really worried about the fact that she had dessert with a coworker, and apparently that has been the reason why everyone's talking like they're in a Pinter play for the first half of the movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Pinter play written by a child. The whole movie feels like it was. It feels like a movie that a kid made in his backyard over the weekend after he saw The Birds. Like, this is what movies are like. I'll just make it, and I'll have my friends act out the parts.
And the child is like, what's the worst thing that could happen between a married couple? One of them has dessert with a coworker.
That's what Mom said Dad did that broke up their marriage. So,
yeah. But much like Prom Night, this movie catapults us right into the action. Immediately after this attack happens, they're like, okay, people are dying in New York. Clearly, since we're in Philadelphia, that will be the next target of whatever's happening. So we got to get out of the city. So,
appreciate that. I mean, like, I'm glad it isn't a fucking snooze fest where you're like, character, 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 blarty blar.
Yeah, because it really helped later on when the characters were dying and I didn't have to worry about them.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have to feel any connection to them when they're watching a zookeeper get eaten on an iPhone. Like, I don't
so
give a shit.
Awful. We haven't even gotten to that part yet when they're in the Filbert restaurant. But everyone in the movie talks, and everyone's really going by the numbers. Like, something's happening. We better get out of town fast. Okay, why? Like, I don't understand why you feel the need to leave immediately. But, like, the government's reaction in the movie seems to be to tell everybody to leave urban centers and go to small towns, which I don't think has ever been a government plan in case of an emergency. Like, maybe.
Well, again, I don't know if you remember after 9/11. They're like, everyone,
I forgot,
please,
I forgot
leave
when,
New York.
When Mayor Bloomberg went on TV and started, I guess it was Giuliani at the time. When Mayor Giuliani went on the TV and said, everybody leave the city. Go to the town of Princeton. Because they immediately get on a train, and John Leguizamo's wife didn't get there in time. So they get on this train, and there's a big to-do about the marital problems when they're handing out tickets. But then John Leguizamo's getting a gets a phone call from his wife, and he goes, I can't hear you. Text me. Text me. I can't hear you.
I can't hear you.
I can't hear you. Text me. This goes on for about 40 minutes. And then he gets a text, and and John Leguizamo says, and this is brilliant writing right here. He goes, oh, no, she's good. She's taking a bus to the town of Princeton. These people live in Philadelphia. Princeton is not a foreign concept to them. The town of Princeton.
Well, no, I don't. I've never even been to Princeton, and I feel comfortable just referring to it as Princeton.
I mean, it's.
I don't have to specify to people that I'm going to the town of Princeton.
Like, or is she going to one of the universities? buildings.
But that's the thing. Even if we didn't know that it's a well-known town because of the university, from the context of the sentence, we should know it's a place that she's going
like
to.
Like, she's not like, she got into Princeton. She'll be going there next semester.
Oh, Mark Wahlberg, she's matriculating at Princeton currently, so we better go there.
She's going to the lair of Lord Princeton. He should be able to lock them up. There's a similar line later on where Zooey Deschanel is and the characters walk into a house, and Zooey Deschanel goes, "There must be a bathroom in this place. I'll go there." And it's like, "There must be a bathroom in this place." Yeah, it's a house. Like, the audience
can assume that there are basic human needs. Eating and shitting. There's a kitchen and there's a bathroom.
It's not like if the line had been, "I'll just go to the bathroom," that the audience would have been like, "How does she know there's a bathroom in this building?"
You're stretching my ability to believe this movie.
M. Night, sit down with me for a second. There's only so much I'm going to buy.
Plants, sure.
We here on Main Street USA just, you know.
Joe Sixpack doesn't understand.
Hockey mom, you know, and so forth.
Yeah.
We're wearing our political allegiance on our sleeve here, guys.
Yeah, red state all the way. Anyway. But anyway, so they leave. They go to the train stops in a station called Filbert because the conductors have lost.
Where Filberts are grown.
Where Filberts are grown, yeah. Where they make paintbrushes. And they.
where the strip Dilbert is written after there was a typo.
But there's the conductors stop the train and get out, and everyone's like, "La, la, 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 where are?" And Mark Wahlberg's like, "We don't even know where we are." You're at a train station, and it says Filbert right there.
Exactly.
And this is on the route of the train. There's a train track. Like, it, as you said, Dan, you said it's the joke from Darjeeling Limited, where it's like, how can we get lost? We're on a train. Exactly. But they're playing it seriously. Like, the train got lost.
Well, what you don't understand is all of the conductors on that train, it's their first day.
Well, the thing, because the conductors are like, "We've lost contact with everybody. There's no one we can't contact from the train." Like, so a standard operating procedure to just stop at whatever station you happen to be at and then get out of the train and leave it?
Abandoned train. Run off into the woods.
The radio's not working. Better junk this train.
Tear off all the scrap.
This train is no longer of any use to us.
Burn it down. I want to see slag on this track.
So
they go to a diner. This is very much like the diner scene in The Birds, except it's shitty. And they watch, instead of seeing birds attack a man and a gas station blow up, which is exciting, they watch on an iPod as a zookeeper allows his arms to be ripped off by lions in a really ridiculously fake scene.
And you know they're watching it on an iPod because the shot, which is clearly just shot on film, like it's just like, "Hey, we want to show you this." They just have this crappy framing of like
wow, that's really clear.
Holding on to a fucking iPhone.
Yeah.
And the whole thing looks fake, and everything in the movie looks fake. It's really poorly done. Then they watch the news, and the news says, "Oh, there are a lot of attacks happening in the Northeast." And the guy who looks like an overweight Barton Fink who's running the diner says, "This town's right here in the Northeast." So everyone immediately runs out of the diner and drives off in different directions. It's like,
yeah, they're like, "Feats don't fail me now." The exit, like, stage left.
And holding their caps onto their head.
There's just people shaped holes in the walls.
There's
and clouds
of smoke behind them.
It's like really, everything is cartoonish. And
Mark Wahlberg's like, "Hey, what are you doing? You're leaving me behind. I got a kid with me."
And they hitch a ride with some people who own a plant nursery.
Well, okay, but meanwhile, they split up. John Leguizamo's like, "I got to go.
I got to go find my wife. Take my daughter. You need her for plot purposes." I'll go on my own.
She might bring you closer together as a couple.
You know what? I'm going to find my wife. I won't bring my daughter along with me, so I'll know where my family is.
Yeah, so
in
John
all this
Leguizamo,
madness, it's best to spread out as much as possible.
Here's an example of how unimaginative the movie is that John Leguizamo and this group, they're driving to Princeton, and this thing that is causing people to kill themselves, this gas or whatever,
it's like some sort of gas in the air at this point in the film.
Yeah, it's already hit Princeton, and there are all these landscapers who have hung themselves from trees, and at this point, like the deaths are so silly in that way that like I half expected a scene at a kid's birthday party where a clown makes a new set of balloon animals and then hangs himself. But they're driving past the landscaping truck and the name on it is Bill's Landscape. He didn't even go to the trouble of creating like a name you might find for a landscaping company in this movie. It's just laziness.
But then there's
M. Night Shyamalan lazy.
There's this tense scene where John Leguizamo tells everyone to roll the windows up, and then he distracts the girl with a math riddle, as he puts
woman,
it.
A woman in the car who's panicked by all
she's
these.
She's panicked. He's a math teacher at the high school, so he says, like, hey, here, I've got a math riddle for you. Not a math problem, not a brain teaser, a math riddle.
I think they came from the high school and saved. Just like they're all just more into God than they are into the subjects that they teach.
But then there's a terrifying slow push in on a rip in the top of the car. And they realize, oh my God, whatever's out there is getting into the car.
The next shot is the car stopping on the road, then immediately accelerating and hitting a tree, and a guy flying out of the windshield of the car in one shot.
Which was actually pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. It was, like, silly. It was like...
it's one of the most hilarious deaths ever put on film.
And then John Leguizamo gets out and slits his wrist with a piece of glass in the middle of the street. And even that was kind of funny.
Acting!
Like, the deaths are just done in such a goofy way that they... There's a guy later who lies down in front of a lawnmower.
You know, I'd like to see a John Leguizamo one-man show of all the characters in The Happening.
That would be a good show, see?
On HBO. An HBO special of that.
But apparently they all came from Spanish Harlem somehow in this version.
But meanwhile... Mark Wahlberg and Zoe Deschanel are having their own adventures.
Yeah. Oh, it's a real Altman film full of parallel plots and different adventures.
There's that really good scene where people are trying to outrun the wind, and then the wind gets them and they freeze.
Yeah. Well, okay. He hitches a ride with a plant-loving guy who owns a greenhouse, who immediately springs to the conclusion, hey, maybe the plants are doing this, which is... Spoiler alert! What's happening?
Yeah.
However,
the happening.
And
what the big twist to me was that it wasn't fucking M. Night Shyamalan who told us that. Like, he normally loves to do that in his movies.
Yeah, he's usually the guy who knows the truth.
Hey, it's me, the crackpot who actually knows everything in the world.
And I'm also the director and the screenwriter. Wink. I'm great.
He kind of tries to cover it up by having the character who says it be the zany guy. Who you believe thinks that plants are responsible for everything.
He does also say that...
Plants kill JFK, you know, like...
He does also say that that bushes can talk to trees and that plants evolve at a rapid rate.
Right,
and so
he has a strange obsession with hot dogs, too.
Yeah, and one of his first lines is, I love hot... Who doesn't like hot dogs?
He's like, you like hot dogs, don't you?
They taste great. They're a very convenient shape. You like hot dogs, right? And then...
There's a cut to Zooey Deschanel, and she's just, like, awkwardly, like, shaking her head. No.
He's like, all right. And then later you see him eating a hot dog, and it's like, ah! He loves hot dogs!
He took hot dogs on the survival adventure.
He's the hot
having.
Dog guy! This is great!
God, it's so good to laugh in such a tough time.
But I see M. Night Shyamalan, literally, he's like... I have all these small characters in this movie who end up dying. I better come up with characteristics for each of them so they're believable. I'm going to make this guy a hot dog lover.
Yeah, he's like, an aficionado.
That must have come after, like, cat person? No, that doesn't work so well. Extreme skateboarder?
Wait, like a half-man, half cat person?
No, just like someone who likes cats.
Like a Jax champion? He plays Jax?
See, that would be more interesting if he was an actual cat person. It's like, I think the plants are doing this. And then he kills someone and they shoot him and then, run, we got a cat person to deal with.
Sleepwalkers.
Yeah, if it was like Stephen King, Sleepwalkers.
Yeah.
At least then it would have Machen Hammock in it.
Yeah, so. That was a very strange movie.
By the way,
incestual cat people.
Here's a side note.
Incestuous cat.
If you're looking for a bad movie to watch in Halloween to laugh at, Sleepwalkers is an A+ bad film. But meanwhile,
in The Happening,
M. Night Shyamalan has someone state the premise of his film, making a huge logical leap. Mark Wahlberg. Basically accepts it, I guess.
Yeah.
Because then later on in the movie, he knows what's going on.
Well, he is a scientist. So
yeah.
He's
a science teacher.
Science teachers teach science, which tells us that if someone tells you something, it's true. And so, and you draw inferences from what you already know and apply that to things going on around you, even if they aren't supported by factual evidence.
I think that's called the scientific method.
Yeah, it's called the scientific method 2.0.
So they...
Anyway, we don't have to go over every adventure they have along the way.
But the thing is, like, there's not a lot of, like, depth to the plot, so I think
it is a movie that goes from point A to point B to point C through point Z.
There's the
and then
the
leaves
scene
you
where
there.
They, like, there's like the two of them and the little girl, and then these two like kids, and they're like banging on this this house trying to get in. after
they've split, they've realized that what it is when there's too many people in a group, plants can sense that and kill them.
Yeah.
So they got to split up into smaller groups.
That's how evolution works. Any defense mechanism a plant has is something that is intentional. It's entirely intentional. It's targeted. There's more than five people walking together. I'm going to release this neurotoxin.
They made a deal with the wind so that the wind will blow whenever they got to release this toxin.
Yeah, there's a scene.
As Stuart pointed out, with Aeolus the wind god, they decided to make a deal.
Well, we talked about it. It's like the scene in Day After Tomorrow where Jake Gyllenhaal is outrunning the cold. There's a scene where he's running down a hall and things are freezing behind him. Mm-hmm. Or like you said, in The Mummy Returns, where they're outrunning the sun.
Yeah.
In this movie, there's a scene where they try and outrun the wind.
And Mark Wahlberg says, we just got to stay ahead of the wind.
Yeah.
Which is impossible.
Well, it's science.
Unless you're, what's his name, Bolt, the Olympic record-holding sprinter.
Usain Bolt?
Yeah. You're not going to be able to outrun the wind. You know, maybe he can. He's got golden shoes.
But yeah, they go to a house and they bang on the doors. And you were talking about this, Stuart.
Yeah, the people aren't very excited about letting in the toxins or terrorists or some shit.
They're distinctly unenthralled by the idea.
Yeah, they're not very enthusiastic about the idea of opening up their doors. And like these kids who are like young teens, of course, they don't take no for an answer. They keep banging on stuff. They keep pushing.
As kids will.
They keep pushing. And finally, I'm guessing hillbillies? I don't know. They're in central Pennsylvania.
Backcountry Pennsylvania hick.
I assume that it's just sentient
house. Shotgun?
Shotgun. Nice. Yeah, it's a sentient shotgun.
Yeah, the door opens, which doesn't seem like a wise move because then toxins could get in. But the door opens and a shotgun comes out and blasts one of the kids. And while the other kid's like, what the heck? Another shotgun pokes through the window and blows his head off.
What I also love is everyone's acting about the people on the other side of the wall as if they don't know what people are. So like they come up to this house and they're peeking through the cracks in the shutters and they see something walk along next to it and they're like, there's something in there. Then there's another one. Like, you know, but they're people inside a house who are talking to them and saying, we're not going to let you in. Like,
there's some really good slow motion when the kids got shot because Mark Wahlberg had to get really upset.
It was about 1 inch away from just being the no that I wanted it to be.
Yeah. And so, undeterred by their experience at this house,
they decide to go to another house.
Which has a crazy old lady in it, but
crazy old lady, you say? I find that hard to believe.
There's a swing.
That first house. The swing is at the house with the shotguns.
First house?
There's a swing at the hanging from a tree, and the little girl's on the swing, and Zooey Deschanel is pushing it, and Mark Wahlberg says, "Do you think that's not a good idea?"
Yeah,
or something like that.
Maybe that's not a good idea.
But then they
like
the camera,
someone told Mark Wahlberg that questions always had like a raising inflection at the end.
But the camera pans up. It's a tree holding that swing up. Bump, bump. And
not
then,
like a giant or?
Nothing. It's not a monster. It's not a robot. Not a crane. It's a tree.
Not like a brontosaurus tail?
No, just like every swing in the world, it's a tree. And then they show like an overhead shot of her swinging on the swing and the branch is shaking. And at any moment you're like, uh-oh, that branch is going to fall off. And then it doesn't. And it's over and it never matters, you know?
Yeah.
It has none of the thrills or horror of the scene in Wizard of Oz where the trees start throwing apples at the Scarecrow and Dorothy. Like, that scene is scarier than the entire movie, The Happening.
But anyway, they go on to another house, which is owned by a crazy old lady.
Sure.
Who
this is after they briefly stop at a realtor's model house.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's where the bathroom question comes up. But anyway, she's drinking her lemon drink.
And
no one talks like a human being in this movie.
No. No, they don't. Well, this woman talks even less like a human being. This woman talks like a rejected Tennessee Williams character.
She does. She's talking over dinner with these characters. She's very mean and hostile and invites them to dinner, and she's creepy. And she says to them over dinner, like, one of you chastens the other to Zooey Deschanel and Mark Wahlberg. She goes, that's the way we's made, speaking of, like, humans. He's made to chase each other.
Well, what you don't realize is she learned how to speak English reading Little Abner comics. So. But she does provide some important expository dialogue, which is that if you're out in the shed, you can talk, and because of some sort of
underground passage from the Underground Railroad.
Yeah, you can be heard in the main house.
She gives them a short lecture on the history of the house and gives them that important piece of information.
I would say it stops the movie cold, but the movie stops cold every 5 minutes.
The movie is very, for a thriller, it's very leisurely paced, and not a lot is happening a lot of the time.
The best part is when they're about to go to bed, and they're like, man, this lady's totally crazy. That's paraphrased, obviously. And
Not that paraphrased. It's pretty close.
And like they hear a noise, so Mark Wahlberg goes to the door. And he sees the old lady in her nightgown down there, and she's like, you're talking about stealing stuff.
You're going to kill me.
And at that point, I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Kill you?
Mark Wahlberg doesn't say, like, no, of course not. What are you, crazy? He says, no, we weren't talking
and
about
this. In a suspicious way. And I was kind of thinking of killing you.
And like the next shot is him like waking up. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's like, you're trying to kill me, aren't you? No, don't you. Well, time to go to bed. Oh, this is going to feel great.
Good night, crazy old lady.
Oh, it's going to feel so good just to lie down, just to get some Z's.
Then I love it. He gets up in the next morning. Zooey Deschanel, the kid are gone. You know, he's slowly, ever so slowly walking through the house. It
creeping
feels like it takes 15 minutes.
Seriously.
He opens her bedroom, and he keeps saying her name. He's like, Mrs. Jones. And he's like, creeping towards the bed, which clearly has a large, oversized doll in it. It's not Mrs. Jones, but he seems to believe it's Mrs. Jones
rotten.
Well, he's
face
very
doll.
Nearsighted. I think, yeah, and it's a creepy doll. I think maybe one of the things about the character that was in a cut scene is that he's nearsighted, so like he has trouble with recognizing what things are.
Earlier scene where he's like talking to a mannequin, thinking it's Zooey Deschanel. It's like a Mr. Magoo character.
He thinks that a hot water heater is, you know, I don't know, a popsicle, and he licks it and burns his tongue. This is why I never wrote Mr. Magoo cartoons. I'm not very good at it. Yeah, okay, Mr. Magoo sees a sewer entrance, and he picks up the manhole cover, and he thinks it's a pizza, and he eats it, and he hurts his teeth. The end.
The end. That's a really short Mr. Magoo cartoon.
Listen, I'm just doing this because I want to work with Jim Backus. That's the only reason I'm interested.
All right, well,
I just wanted to do my answering machine message.
Anyway, well, she's quickly dispatched with... The crazy old lady rams her head into a mirror because the neurotoxin gets into her brain.
Oh, this is after she yells at him to get out of her house.
Yeah, I guess the plants are angered that she's not being more hospitable than Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I don't get it.
The plants seem to be very, like, they don't...
They're pretty capricious.
They kind of have a do-no-harm rule with Mark Wahlberg. Actually, you know what? It's that the toxin seems to be getting stronger and stronger in strength and even killing single people.
Yeah.
So we see her...
Like the single guy starring David Silverman.
Jonathan Silverman.
Jonathan Silverman, sorry.
We know we've both gotten names wrong at some point during this.
I haven't.
Another perfect Wellington. we see her walk by a window. Then the camera follows along the inside of the wall for, what, an hour? I don't know. While she's walking on the other side of
the
wall. And it's literally like M. Night Shyamalan was like, you know what? The set dressers did such a good job on this set. I'm just going to show it for a long time. This is going to be great. And then you hear... thump, 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 and the assumption is she's like hitting her head against the wall or something. That's goofy. And then she walks up to the window and smashes her head through the window, and you're like, oh, that's what they actually had her doing. That's stupid. Yeah. Okay.
And
then she dies smashing her head through a window. That part is kind of creepy, though, when her head just smashes through that
comparably.
Window.
Comparably.
I mean, what's going to be on her tombstone? Think about that.
Pepperonis and extra cheese. Remember those ads, everybody?
New York City.
Yeah, isn't that what, like...
That's a different
weren't there always...
I thought we were just doing ad taglines.
No.
Weren't there always, like, banditos or something?
It was a guy who was going to be shot by a firing squad.
Oh,
goes,
okay.
What would you like on your tombstone? And then he goes, pepperoni and sausage. Tombstone pizza, Pierre! And it's like, we were going to shoot you for your crimes against the state, but you know what? We'll just get you a pizza instead.
Here you go.
And then, they say,
or
like...
Or was the joke because they're going to bury him in an unmarked grave or something?
Don't they say later standing around, like all the firing squad jollily having pizza?
Because it starts, he says, blindfold? No. Cigarette? No. What do you want in your tombstone? And then he goes that... Yeah, and then they're all sitting around eating pizza, and the leader of the firing squad goes, napkin? And the guy goes, no. And the firing squad leader has a look on his face like, ooh, you got me again. It's a nonsensical commercial when you really think about it.
He had a mustache, didn't he?
Yes.
One of the characters.
They both did, I think. But really, when you name your pizza company after a grave marker, you're asking for that kind of trouble, you know?
But they look like characters from the Croc cartoon, right?
The comic strip Croc. The French Foreign Legion comic strip.
Yeah, the one that
the most relevant thing to most newspaper readers. They're like, oh, yes, the Zany Adventures of the French Foreign Legion.
Oh, that
something
Croc.
that has a comedy device hasn't been in style since, say, Abbott and Costello.
It's at least as relevant as, like, Mark Trail is fighting fucking animal smugglers all the time. Like, how many times can he go through that story, you know? There was a really sad Mark Trail I remember seeing once where Mark Trail and the kid who pals around with him, who I guess is his son, are in a cavern that's flooding, and it was just like 3 or 4 panels, and it was just like, I'm scared, Dad. I know, it's okay. I'm scared. And he goes, but I'm proud of you, son. And that was the whole thing. And it was like, this is the saddest comic strip. There was no, like, will Mark Trail escape? Or like, but wait, look, that hatch up there. There was no, like, cliffhanger. It was just, these characters are going to die now. And they're
that's a good son, they're
approaching to each other. Yeah,
I love that comic. For my money, that's the strangest of the soap opera comics by far.
Mark Trail, yeah. One of them. I don't know. When Terry and the Pirates had that character who was living inside of an exoskeleton, that was pretty weird, too. But that's an adventure
anyway,
comic.
They get back to the...
And when Brenda Starr had that abortion on camera in the comic strip, that was weird.
To get back to the happening, I'm sure you think that there's probably an exciting end to this film.
You'd be wrong.
Surely there's not just a deus ex machina.
You'd assume that Mark Wahlberg beats up every plant in America to keep us safe, or something like, or like they set the forests on fire, or something like that.
Like a Treebeard style character shows up. Exactly.
And he goes, if you can defeat me in single combat, I will save the humans.
It's like the end of Karate Kid Part 2. With, like, all the humans playing little hand drums and
exactly.
Peter Cetera song or something.
No, it just turns out...
And then Kyle MacLachlan tells him, you must not fear. Fear is the mind killer.
That would be awesome.
Fear is the little death within us all.
Yep.
Spice. When I saw that as a kid, I first saw that pilot in the beginning who's in the giant tank, and he's like a whale man.
Yeah.
That freaked me out. I was amazed by that.
If you think that this discussion of Dune is anticlimactic... Just watch The Happening.
So the old lady kills herself, and then the wind comes up. Oh, no! Mark Wahlberg, talking through the secret passage we found out about before, tells his wife and their new adopted daughter of their friend who died, they should close all the doors, close all the windows. Ah! And then he goes, no, I'm going to come out and be with you. And he walks out, and then they go, no, we'll be with you. And they walk out, and everything's fine.
Lo and behold, it's all over.
Oh, thank goodness. And
3 months
not
later,
cut to 3 months later, civilization is fine, and there's a guy on TV saying this was an act of nature and we'll never know.
Yeah, another scientist reiterating the idea that, oh, you know what? Science is basically just a bunch of people not learning about things, just accepting the unknowability of the world.
And Zooey Deschanel learns that she's pregnant and has a big smile on her face because now she can project all of her own insecurities onto a child and ruin that child's life.
But then we cut to Paris. Oh, my God. What's going on in Paris, guys?
Paris Hilton?
No, Paris, the town, Paris.
Not Paris, Texas, either. Paris, France.
It would be more interesting if it was Harry Dean Stanton. If it was exactly. Harry Dean Stanton sitting in a peep show booth talking to, was it Nastasha Kinski?
Yeah.
And then suddenly plants started killing themselves, you know.
Oh, my God. Wait, the plants are killing themselves?
I would love to see Wim Wenders
The Happening.
Wim Wenders, that would have been so... Well, but here's the thing. Wim Wenders, The Happening would have had atmosphere, and it would have had tone. You know, say what you will about his movies, they can be slow, but they have atmosphere, whereas this had nothing. For a movie about an airborne toxin, there's no atmosphere in this movie, you know.
Airborne toxin that makes you kill yourself, you would expect, like, they're like, well, we can't rely on, you know, normal-style fucking, like, fright gags to work. Maybe we should try and focus on, I don't know, getting people to, like,
ending
scared
of this movie...
Yeah.
They cut to France, and it's like, oh my God, it's happening again. And it's basically the same ending as 28 Weeks Later, when, like... It's
spoiler
like,
alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert for 28 Weeks Later, where the last shot is a bunch of zombies running in front of the Eiffel Tower. And when I saw that...
going, spring break! Yeah!
With berets on.
When I saw that ending, I'm like...
Holding huge loaves of bread.
Sacre bleu! French zombies.
Les zombies.
And in both cases, in this movie and in 28 Weeks Later, which is a much better movie than this movie, but in both cases, I was like, you realize, am I supposed to be creeped out by this? I'm kind of glad. I'm like, oh, at least the French are getting it too.
Wow. That's really
look, man,
hateful towards the French.
I'm not saying it's hateful towards the French. I'm saying, man, if it's going to happen to us, why not the French?
But it's You're also just like, glad it wasn't like an extremely anti-American movie. Yeah, it's sure. like, the reason the planet they're attacking is because America sucks.
Yeah. No blood for oil. Get out of Iraq. Plants. You know what we're talking about. Yeah, I guess we'll kill everybody so that America will stop being imperialist. Fuck you. I won't do what you tell me. And then the plants go to a rage concert. And, you know, that's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
Smash some Starbucks windows.
They break open a prison cell with Mumia, Abu Jamal, and
the plants just wanted America to free Mumia. Yeah. They could have... Why didn't they just arrange a crop circle that said free Mumia?
Dudes, if the government would just listen to the plants... Mm-hmm. Things would be perfect.
Well, it's just like that Spinal Tap song, Listen to What the Flower People Say.
Yeah.
It's, but the Shark Sandwich. I haven't seen 28 Weeks Later yet, and now my image is literally of the zombies running with their arms up in the air, going, yeah!
It's only slightly less comical than that, actually.
Okay. With big backpacks on their backs.
We are backpacking through Europe.
I'm French, but I'm backpacking through France. Zombie!
This string of dialogue brings to mind the scene in Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo, where the Canadian tourists run over and take shits next to cars and stuff. It's pretty awesome.
Have I told you my anecdote about Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo?
No, you haven't.
I was walking home from work, and they had the posters up for it on, you know, a construction site or something. So it was coming out, and someone had drawn...
Not like a public library? Or
no, not the mayor's office. Someone had drawn glasses and a mustache on Rob Schneider, and it made the movie look like it might be a sophisticated, like, kind of foreign sex farce. Like, it was, I was like, yeah, that looks like a very brainy movie now that he has glasses and a mustache. The poster instantly became like a Woody Allen movie, you know.
Final judgments. I forgot to do the special Halloween final judgments this time. I'll do it this time. Was this film totally scarifying? Was it frighteningly funny?
I see you sitting at work trying to come up with these.
Or was it totally snorifying? Stuart?
Oh, we do have fun, don't we?
Yeah, this is going to be... This is a surprise. This is going to be a big twist, but I think it was snorifying.
Snorifying, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're not going to back it up with anything? You're
just no. It was like this wasn't as like abysmal as Lady in the Water, where I'm watching it and I'm like, what's going on? Why am I watching this? But it also was worse than the other ones. So this is probably his second to worst.
That's probably the title of his next movie, The Other Ones.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to actually say that I thought this was frighteningly funny.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just scared by how funny I thought this was.
Look, they're fucking theme categories, all right? I dictated the theme categories. I'm going to stick to them.
Oh, Dan McCoy, you're so easy to needle.
Stu, you and I watched Lady in the Water together.
We did.
I think pre-Flophouse, we were just like, this will be hilarious, and it wasn't.
It was really just bad.
Boring and painful.
Yeah, it's not a good movie.
This movie was really, I thought that there was like a lot of laughable dialogue.
That's right, on the Narf meter, that had many more Narfs than this one. This one had many fewer ladies in water than that one.
Yeah.
Less Paul Giamatti, too. But more goofy dialogue.
I'm sure he's really disappointed
about
that,
more people
actually.
Running into trees. More people feeding themselves to lions.
The guy feeding himself to the lion looks so disinterested in being eaten by lions. He was like, lion's ripping my arm off. Well, whatever. Okay.
Here's
another lion ripping my arm off. What are you going to do?
For me, I think this movie was, if you're in the market for a recent bad film, I think this is worth checking out, you know, once. Because it's just so weirdly miscalculated.
I gotta say, I'm a split up here. Part of me thinks it was snorifying.
Snorifying, yeah.
But there are other parts of it that were frighteningly funny. They really poor pieces of writing, you know, bad acting. You know what? I'm gonna say frighteningly funny. I'm gonna go on that one.
So I was the odd man out, huh?
Yeah. I guess you're going to have to leave the island.
But
it's been beautiful knowing you.
Which is also M. Night
Shyamalan's
next
movie, The Island.
That's
what I get
for all
my vitriol.
The island.
Your vitriol. All the spite that pours out of me.
Yeah.
So that was great.
And also M. Night Shyamalan is completely overrated.
Completely.
Didn't I already say I wanted to shoot him? No,
I didn't. I don't know if you should say that out loud.
Yeah, that seems like a threat. You did say that you wanted to punch him.
Oh, okay. Is that a threat? I don't actually want to threaten
him. Well, it's a lower level threat, certainly. Unless you were going to shoot him with your fist or punch him with a bullet from a gun.
Wait, what if I could fire my hands from like my wrist?
Oh, like Kane.
Yeah.
Like Kane from the X-Men comics.
Yeah.
Then yeah.
I think that's acceptable.
Go ahead. So it's basically just like you have a built-in extendo glove.
I said something like mean about him before.
You had.
Okay.
But what I want to say is
he's very rude to waiters and other help staff.
Like I feel like in many ways I feel like bad just that we watch this and we're doing a podcast on it, because anything that gives him more like, you know, all of our listeners, like we're just
millions of them.
Yeah, everybody now people might actually go out and rent his movies. Like
nationwide theatrical release isn't going to get as many people as this podcast.
Like Ridley Scott makes generally shitty movies, but
he's mediocre.
Okay, but
he has one masterpiece. He's mediocre.
He's not like his masterpiece was
Alien. Come on, man.
Okay. I was making sure you weren't going to say Blade Runner.
No, come on. Blade Runner's overrated too, though not as overrated as M. Night Shyamalan.
But like M. Night Shyamalan just makes terrible movies, like abysmal movies. And he shouldn't make movies anymore. Like, I'd rather Uwe Boll make movies until I am long dead.
At least Uwe Boll is a guy who like feels like when you're watching a movie by him or you read an interview with him, he comes off as like a crazy funny guy.
Yeah,
there's some sort
of joy in what he's doing.
Yeah, whereas M. Night Shyamalan,
which I would too. If I made nothing but terrible movies, I would be like, I'm gonna make the next one even stupider.
Yeah, like it's a challenge for him now. Whereas M. Night, and he enjoys it, but like M. Night Shyamalan feels like a guy who thinks he's doing you a favor by making this movie and showing it to you. It's like you are going to love this so much, and I'll do it. You know what? Fine, I'll do it. I'll make this movie for you. Okay, I'll do it. You know what? You can watch it. You know what? You love it. Done. Anyway, give me $1 million. Now write a book about how great I am, you know, and so forth.
Yeah.
Didn't see that ending coming, did you? No, because I'm that good. But you do see his ending coming.
Going into it, like, somebody, you know, obviously somebody had spoiled it for me and was like, it's the trees and plants that are killing people. So I'm like... like, okay, that's retarded, but I'll watch it because that sounds really stupid. And I go into it expecting it to be kind of like hidden, like the little bit of subterfuge as to actually what's going on. But no, it's like the first shot is like a bunch of trees like shooting out toxin into people. Like, it's terrible.
And it's not like you could have done like the way like Cloverfield is not a perfect movie, but they do a good job of kind of like portioning out the information about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, in terms of them seeing TV broadcasts or catching glimpses of things. But here it's like, see some trees, scene, guy says the plants are doing it, scene, the end. There's no build up or anything. You don't get drips of information or anything like that.
Terrible.
I guess what I'm saying is, if you want a movie where people are running around and getting scared by things, go see Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds.
I guess what you're saying is, it was less like The Happening and more like The Napping.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Crappening.
that would have been way better.
Please, Elliot.
More like The Flappening.
I don't even know what that means.
More like The Slappening.
More, if you were drinking liquor or you're watching it, more like The Grappening.
Right. No, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
If you were going to the gynecologist, it would be more like The Pappening.
If it was made with nothing but frogs in the movie, it would be The Hoppening.
Nice. Shoppening and so forth. Chaplaining.
And
the
so
Chopanning.
And so forth.
It was about a pianist. It would be called The Chopanning.
Ad nauseum. All right.
If it starred Iced Cube, it would be The Rappening.
All right. Come on. We've talked very long about this, so let's quickly go into our actual recommendation of horror movies.
Clappening.
For people who are looking for a horror film this Halloween, something that they actually like. Stuart?
Yeah. This is going to be rough. The only movies I've seen recently were Fool's Gold, which was not a horror movie, but I think it was every other kind of movie. And I watched this totally insane French movie directed by Enki Bilal, the like comics artist who you might remember from like the Nicopol trilogy and various other bullshit that was in Heavy Metal magazine back in like the 90s. And that was crazy and retarded.
And what was the name of that crazy retarded movie?
Immortal. I don't know. How about I recommend The League of Gentlemen? Did I recommend that last time?
No, you didn't.
You were talking to me about it on the walk home, I think.
League of Gentlemen, it's a British comedy show. Part of me wants to recommend it because Little Britain has just come to the States and it gets a lot of credit. But League of Gentlemen, they have a couple seasons out. You can probably find it. I think they show it on BBC America every once in a while. But it's great because it's all these guys playing. It's this comedy group that play all the characters in this weird little town in England. And if you took out the laugh track, it would definitely be a horror movie. Like, it's just totally creepy and weird and kind of gross.
Yes, so. That's true. It is an off-putting show. Well, before I make my recommendation, I want to say, Stuart, I watched one of your previous recommendations, Inside, or as the French say, à l'intérieur.
Sure.
And
I watched The Signal recently, too, on your recommendation, wow. Dan. Mm.
I want to warn listeners that if they like really unpleasant experiences, Inside is something they should watch once, much like I would recommend Audition, say, to be watched.
Oh, Auditions, come on, that's not that scary.
No, it's not that scary, but it's unpleasant. This is actually more unpleasant.
Unpleasantly boring.
This is more unpleasant than...
I like Mikkei stuff, but, you know, that's...
Oh, my God. Audition is harrowing at the end. However, Inside is harrowing through two-thirds of the movie, at least.
I almost barfed once when watching it.
So I
and
just
you've got a very strong stomach.
Especially with gore, yeah.
I've seen the porn you look at, and it is horrifying.
It's horrifying, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can't stop.
I like horror movies, but I like a good creature feature.
Sure.
I like something like American Werewolf in London.
A good slasher masher.
You know, something with some laughs and some thrills.
Sure.
Inside,
I recommend Fool's Gold to you.
Sad.
Fool's Gold
unpleasant.
Is a movie where you see the poster in the theater and you're like, that's a poster that was made as a prop for another movie. Like, that's not a real movie.
The thing about that movie is it was like...
It's like in Burn After Reading with that Dermot Mulroney film in it.
Oh, Coming Up...
Coming Up Daisy.
Coming Up Daisy, yeah.
The,
would you just get down out of that tree?
The thing about Fool's Gold is that, they're building off of the comedy chemistry that's already present from How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Mm-hmm. But not the same characters.
But the same actors. So yeah. They're pretty much the same character. In the trailers and poster, they promise lots of bikini and shirtless Matthew McConaughey shots. So both like boyfriend and girlfriend are like, I wouldn't mind watching that one. And then
this is something we can mutually masturbate to.
And they also throw in like a treasure plot. Like plot with treasure. And Donald Sutherland?
Sounds great to me.
And
sign me up.
And Ray Winstone?
Sign me up
that's
times
value.
Two.
Yeah, I mean, it's
how much would you pay for this movie? $39.99? Well, guess what? Right now, you can get it for $19.99.
All right, guys.
So what? I missed the Inside recommendation. What's that about?
The Inside was just saying that like it's a genuinely upsetting film. So
it's a French movie.
You just
got to
know what you're getting into. But my actual recommendation,
it's really
it's terribly disturbing. My actual recommendation, however, I'm just looking at my own DVD shelf because I did not think this through.
That
before
makes
the
two
podcast.
Of us.
I'm going to recommend Slither.
Good call.
The James Gunn film.
From Project Runway.
Yes. Tim Gunn's movie, Slither, about an alien intelligence who comes down to Earth. A bunch of worms that inhabit people, turning them into zombies.
Like Michael Rooker.
Yeah, it's got Nathan Fillion in it from Firefly. Jenner Fisher, TV's Pam from The Office, has a small role.
Oh, yeah.
As you say, Michael Rooker's in it. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, is Elizabeth Banks, popular comic actress.
She's in W.
Yeah, she is. She
so it's a
Bush, right?
It's a good 1980s style horror comedy, and it's got a lot of practical special effects, a lot of gross makeup. It's a lot of fun.
Scary stuff, huh?
Yeah.
I just had one in mind.
Freak me
out.
And
then I lost it for a second.
It was the peanut butter solution, wasn't it?
No. Well, War of the Worlds, Steven Spielberg, recommend that. That was better than this movie. If you want to see something with the same kind of, like an older thing maybe, with like the same kind of mounting terror feel that this was going for but doesn't, then Village of the Damned is good in that way. The first like 10 or 15 minutes of that movie all the women in this town fall asleep at once, and no one knows why. It's like there's a radius around the town, and if you enter it, you fall asleep. And it takes like 10 or 15 minutes at the beginning, the British military kind of like sending guys over and trying to figure out where this perimeter lies and how they can get past it. And it's actually really good and suspenseful in a way that you wouldn't expect it to be. And then, of course, there's like crazy children with hypnotic eyes and stuff, and it's really good.
George Sanders in that movie? Or?
I think he's the school teacher, actually, if I'm remembering correctly. But that one's really good. Or if you've never seen, there's a documentary that they made, or a faux documentary they made in England in the 60s called The War Game, about this is what would happen if England was struck by a nuclear attack during a wider nuclear war. And it takes you, as in documentary style, kind of like step by step, here's how it happened, and here's what the people were like, here's what they did next. And it gets across the idea, again, the idea the happening was going for of like, we don't know what's going on, there's a wider catastrophe, and we're just part of it, and there's nothing we can do about it, in a much better way. This is a documentary the BBC commissioned from a director whose name I don't remember, and they considered it too graphic and too frightening to be shown on television, so it was given a theatrical release, and it was either nominated or won Best Documentary Short Subject from the Academy Awards. Really scary, and in a way where it's like, you're worried that that's going to happen when you wake up the next day. And also, you know what? Why not? The Thing. I don't care. Throw it in there. Again.
John Carpenter's
The Thing. Brilliant movie. One of the best horror movies ever made, in my opinion.
I agree.
And it just does everything so well that this movie fucking is shitty about. The characters are really fun and interesting, and you believe them. It's really suspenseful. You genuinely are worried about them and don't know what's going to happen next. You know, and then the ending could be seen as an anticlimax, but it's so perfectly done at the end that, you know, you feel good about it.
And I would go so far as to say, best Wilford Brimley movie.
Oh, by far.
Wait a minute. Hard Target?
Oh, he makes a good point. Sorry, you're going to have to retry
that. Hard Target? Thank you.
So what is that, 4 recommendations from me?
Yeah.
Chew on that. Yeah. Chew on that.
New Flophouse record.
And if you want to just see a weird movie, I just finished watching The President's Analyst with James Coburn.
Right.
And that was a crazy movie.
Jesus, Jabberjaw.
So I'm a talking shark who plays in a band.
Drums.
He plays drums in an underwater band.
How does he hold the drumsticks right with little fins?
I think he wraps his fins around.
Well, Elliot and Stuart hash this out.
He doesn't have thumbs, but he talks like Curly. That's
good
a weird
night.
Thing.
I've been Dan McCoy.
And I've always been Stuart Wellington.
And I will continue to be Elliot Kalin.
Yeah.
Sorry about all the recommendations at the end there. I needed to get the happening out of the taste out of my mouth.
YM is Young Miss magazine.
No, I know Young Miss. I don't know what
this column
is.
They had this little column where
you didn't read Young Miss magazine.
I never read it. That was a magazine that friends of mine in middle school used to go look it up in the library.
Yeah, yeah.
And just look at pictures of girls in it.
Oh, maybe the guys I was with were doing it for that. I was reading it with them. Like, we'd sit around the table and somebody would read out the Say Anything section, which would be girls like writing in embarrassing stories, and then they'd rate them on gross out factor. And my favorite was the one where the girl was at a pharmacy and there was like a hot guy working there, and she decided to get some candy that was behind the counter, and she asked for a greasy penis instead of Reese's Pieces.
that never happened in the world.
Well, it was
that was written by a 45-year-old copywriter editor who works for the magazine.
Well, good stuff, sir. Good stuff.
Tell that to Blushing in Bermuda.
Sure.
Let's dig into the show.
Okay, Deep Dish Flophouse.